now for The Drive with Mark Ennis, presented by The Fitness Market on 93.9 The Ville. The Fitness Market is Louisville's premier location for home and commercial fitness equipment and electric bikes. Find them online at fitnessmarket.com. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Mark Blankenbaker.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis here in Nashville ahead of tomorrow's football game between Louisville and Western Kentucky. Mark Blankenbaker back in studio. He'll head down tomorrow and join us here as well. And joining us now here on The Drive, Tyler Mansfield. He covers Western Kentucky for Inside Hilltopper Sports. That is the Western Kentucky site in the Rivals family of networks, so he's a co-worker. Tyler, welcome in to The Drive on 93.9 The Ville, buddy. We appreciate it.
Hey, Mark. How you doing, buddy? Good to be on today.
Doing just fine here. All right, let's start big picture with the team before we get into kind of the granular level things about this year's team. Two games into the year, your thoughts on sort of where Western is, how they look relative to what you thought they'd look like in the Ty Hilton era two games in?
I think Western's been solid through 2 weeks. You know, it's a new team, it's a new culture. Of course, they struggled, you know, last year with under Mike Sanford, and now it's a new culture, it's a new approach now. The offense is taking time to get back to where it once was when Hilton was the OC at Western. But overall, two games have been solid so far, I would say. I mean, there's still things to improve on, the quarterback play, throwing the deep ball, and, you know, things like that in little bitty areas. But so far, so good, I think, for Western.
Thinking about Western, like a lot of it through two games for Louisville, there's just – you can't help but compare to what happened to last year, you know, to look for areas of improvement and what went wrong and all that sort of thing. As you look back now and see, you know, things that maybe are better – like, what's your post-mortem on kind of the quick and rather abrupt kind of downfall under Mike Sanford? What went wrong there? What was wrong about him? Because everyone thought that guy was going to be a star and that was such a shrewd hire. Why didn't it work?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think when he took the job over, Western was coming off great years under Jeff Rom. You know, the offense was scoring 45 points plus per game, you know, 400-plus yards per game. You had Brandon Dowdy and Mike White at quarterback. I mean, everything was just clicking there. The defensive, I mean, the whole unit from top to bottom was so good. I mean, they had a veteran staff, veteran players. And then you bring in Mike Sanford, and he's kind of not really rebuilding because the program was good for a long time. But, I mean, it's different guys that didn't play that much. I think Sanford came in with the pro-style offense system that most guys didn't want to run. I think they were so used to Brom's system that they kind of said, well, we want to stick to what we're used to. And I think it just – I think players just got frustrated, didn't buy in to really what he wanted to do, and I think Sanford didn't really want to adjust with what his players wanted to do, really. So I think there's just not a good overall mix of what everyone wanted to be on the same page, I guess you could say. And I think that's kind of what led to just two, not bad years, but 2 years that Western would like to have back.
Talking with Tyler Mansfield here on The Drive on 93.9 The Ville. All right, would you agree then, and I'm going to assume that it was at least considered or a large fact, like when Western is like, all right, we got to hire a new football coach and we got to fix this and we're going to pull the plug on Mike Sanford here pretty quickly, were they explicitly saying to themselves, we got to get back on like the Jeff Brom tree here? Like, is that why Ty Hilton is back here?
I think it's a very good point. I think Hilton was a finalist for the job before Sanford got hired. Why Washington didn't hire him then? I mean, that's a question we all ask ourselves still today. But I think once Stafford got hired and they had, you know, those two downfall years, and then they're wondering, well, Hilton's still available. Did we go after him again? And I think that's kind of what set him apart from everybody else in this final search, because he's been around Brom. He knows the offense. He knows what Western's capable of doing throughout the years. And I think that's the main call they wanted to make. And, of course, he took the job, so everything worked out.
Mark, go for it, buddy, if you had a question.
All right, yeah, I'll jump in. Yeah, I'm curious about the Western Kentucky defense, and we were talking before you came on, Tyler, about them covering the deep ball. I don't know how much they'll have to cover that tomorrow, but, you know, how are they against stopping the run? Just up front, we know what Louisville will do running the football. How have they been first 2 weeks stopping that run game?
The run game's been really good. I mean, the rushing attack on defensive side of the ball, especially. I mean, when you look at Clayton White's system, this is a third-year DC that's been at Western. He was under Sanford, and now under Hilton, he got retained. And these are players that have played in the same system for 3 years now. They're used to it, and they're pretty good. I think against FIU had less than 200 yards rushing. Central Arkansas only had 20 net rushing yards. They aired the ball out quite a bit that game. But the rushing defense has been very, very good. I know Louisville runs the ball, you know, very, very heavily and very successful doing so. So I know that their hands will be full on Saturday against that rushing defense, or that rushing offense, excuse me. But I think overall the rushing defense has been good. I think they're explosive, they're talented, and there's guys like, you know, Malik Staples and Juwan Jones and guys on defensive line that have just been really, really good through 2 weeks, and I think they'll be up to the challenge against Louisville.
And Malik Staples is a linebacker that was here, you know, and transferred down there. So he might be geared up to play some of his former teammates. How's he been since joining the Hilltoppers?
Yeah, he's been solid. We talked to him this week at practice one day, and we said, well, you're playing Louisville, your old team. What are your emotions and stuff? He said, well, I'm fired up. You know, it's guys he said he's talked to throughout the week saying, you know, trash talking back and forth like players do. But through 2 weeks, he's been really, really good. I mean, against Central Arkansas, he had to struggle with that first game of the year. It was a new program. But against FIU, he was making himself known out there. I watched the game live on TV, and he was really, really, really good. Of course, he's a veteran player. He knows what he's doing. He's explosive, and he's really, really big for Western.
Talking with Tyler Mansfield with Inside Hilltopper Sports. It's the Western Kentucky site in the Rivals family of sites. About tomorrow's game between Louisville and Western Kentucky. You mentioned the Central Arkansas game. It's hard for a team to give up 20 net yards or whatever it was on the ground and lose the game, but Western did manage to do that. What went wrong in that game that Western blew a two-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter and ended up losing that game?
Yeah, you know, that's one of those games where you look back on it and you're like, how in the world can Western lose that game? Well, their secondary struggled significantly. I think there's a receiver from Central Arkansas that had over 200 yards and three or four touchdowns. He was all over the place. They couldn't contain him. Their quarterback lit him up. I think Western's secondary was the biggest storyline, the weakness of the game. Of course, Western wasn't very sharp on offensive either. I mean, you look at Stephen Duncan, the quarterback, threw a couple interceptions in that first game of the year. And I think it's kind of – you could tell, like, Western lost to Maine last year, and it was kind of the same type of game. Western had a lead and then kind of take the foot off the gas and kind of cruise for a while. And here came an FCS program that beat them. So I think it's just kind of the same thing as last year. It's just the not enough intensity and effort there at the very end, and then, of course, it showed.
Are you encouraged at all then that, you know, week one you lose that game, it's a disappointment, it's a game you figure that you're going to win, that they were able at least to go on the road the next week and kind of grind one out against FIU, which is, you know, a decent team, or has been at least up until this year recently? Like, are you encouraged by their ability to sort of get up off the mat after a disappointing loss in the opener then?
Yeah, I am. It's like Coach Hilton said in his press conference Monday. He said he'd rather be 1-1 with a Conference USA win than a loss. I mean, he said, of course, he wants to have that first game back now that his team's getting more and more involved with what his system is. But he said Central Arkansas was a tough loss, of course. No one wants to lose at home to a school you have to pay to come play you. But I bounced back with the FIU win on the road, of course. Now you have an extra leg in the Conference USA standing. So I think it's okay now. I think they're improving. But, of course, that first game was one that they want back. But, of course, it's too late now.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, you know, and I'm also curious about the offense there. You know, from watching just a little bit, it seems like it's, you know, snap the ball and shotgun, you know, quick release. How's that worked so far? And tell me about these interceptions that have been happening.
Yeah, I think, the quarterback, Stephen Duncan, he knows the system. He knows what he's doing. And he's the guy Hilton wants to be the starting quarterback. I mean, he's thrown four interceptions in two games, which no coach wants to see out of your quarterback. But I think, like Hilton said, he has to play in order to learn how to get better. He hasn't been the best yet, and the deep ball struggled. But I think throughout the year he'll continue to progress. You have a guy on the roster named Todd Story, an Arkansas transfer who played against Alabama, who's played in the SEC, and people wonder why he isn't the starting quarterback. Well, Steven's the guy that Hilton wanted to start. If Hilton wanted Story to start, then Story would be the starter, of course. But I think it's just a week-by-week thing with Duncan. I think it's about learning how Hilton wants to approach things, because Duncan was used to Sanford's pro style, you know, throw for 3 or 4 yards and then run the ball next. And now it's about airing it out, trying to get more receivers, tight ends involved. So I think overall it's just about Duncan finding his approach and finding his spark and, you know, making the right throws. Don't overthrow people. Don't underthrow people. Don't throw in traffic. So I think so far it's just about getting his touch where he wants to be and kind of finding that offensive spark that he needs.
Who should Louisville fans look out for, just in terms of not Stephen Duncan, but like a ball carrier or wide receiver? Like, who would you tab as the main playmaker out there tomorrow or, you know, for the rest of even the season for Western Kentucky?
I would say running back Gage Walker. He actually was a defensive back under Mike Sanford last year. Didn't even play on the opposite side of the ball. And now through two games, he leads Conference USA in rushing yards. He has 252 yards and three scores in his first two games playing the position since high school. He's an offensive-powered guy. He's strong. He's stout. He doesn't get tired after playing defense for so long. You know, he never wants to come off the field, like Kelton said this week. But Gage Walker is the name to watch. Very, very, very good running back. And I think throughout the year he'll continue to show why he's the number one back and for Western.
Talking with Tyler Mansfield here on The Drive on 93.9, The Ville, about tomorrow's game. Louisville, at this point, Mark and I were talking about this earlier, averaging well over 6 yards a carry. They're 11th in rushing yards per game, 10th in yards per carry. It's been a pretty heavy rushing attack, and it's been a pretty successful one. Javian Hawkins, one of the leaders in the country in yards after contact. Has Western faced anything even close, you know, to that, and what do you think they do to sort of compensate for Louisville being, at least at this point, this established at running the ball?
I think it'll definitely be a test for Western. I know their rushing defense is pretty good, but Louisville's offensive unit, you know, rushing the ball is really, really good. I know Western will get wore out, you know, pretty much. I know it'll be a challenge for them. I mean, Louisville can probably explode, you know, rushing the ball this week, and Western could still have a chance to win. I think it bounces out well, but I know that there'll be struggles. I know there'll be times where Louisville breaks off for big runs and Helton won't like that, but I know it's going to happen because Western hasn't faced a team like Louisville that runs the ball this effectively in a long time. So I think it'll be just kind of interesting to see how Western approaches that rushing attack and kind of sees how they match up and who they can contend and kind of limit it if they can in a certain way.
Well, I don't know, Tyler, if you've heard, but there are rumors at this point that there is an issue with Juwan Pass and his foot, and that you may see less, you know, you may see anywhere from, you know, 50-50 quarterbacks between Juwan Pass and Malik Cunningham for Louisville, down to you might not see Juwan Pass at all tomorrow. How significantly do you think that changes the game for or against Western and how they defend Louisville?
I think that's huge. Juwan Pass is obviously a great player. I know he likes to run more than he does pass. I think that helps Western, obviously, but I think it's hard to prepare for, too. But if you prepare all week for Juwan Pass and you see McCunningham out there running the ball, I think that's tough for anybody. I think it, you know, hurts Louisville, helps Western, and may do the vice versa, but I think that's obviously a huge storyline. I'm not sure how Western will prepare for that. I guess they just have to get the guys ready and tell them you don't know what to expect, but just kind of defend who you can, pretty much.
Mark, you're up.
Yeah. Oh, all right. But, you know, Malik Cunningham last year entered the game against Western Kentucky and led Louisville to victory. It was a tight ball game. Really, it was the last game that Louisville won last year. Would that signal to you if Malik Cunningham does, you know, start the game and Western Kentucky was able to win it, or on the other side, if it got really far away, what would that tell you? As we're going into the game three of the Tyson Helton era down there in Bowling Green, how the outcome goes if Malik Cunningham is the main guy for Louisville at quarterback, and either Western Kentucky pulls it away or if Louisville runs away with it, like either case, how would you react to that?
There's different scenarios there. I think if Louisville wins the game, I think Western's okay. I think they still say, hey, it was a big in-state rivalry, an ACC program, very, very good. I think even if you didn't prepare for the same quarterback, that Western still came out and did what they could. Now, if Western wins, I think it's sick for their confidence and sick for the fan base with the new coach and a team that just won, you know, three games last year. You already, you know, get close to matching that this year. There's different ways to look at it. You can't prepare for things that go on like that with Malik Cunningham maybe playing more than past does. But I think just overall from a standpoint of where you look at things from different sides, I think either way the game goes, Western can still say they were there and they fought, or if they win, they won. I mean, there's different ways to look at it, I guess you could say.
All right. Tyler Mansfield, Inside Hilltopper Sportsman, thank you for the time, and good luck tomorrow. Be safe travels here to Nashville for this one, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it, guys. See you guys tomorrow.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot. There you go. Right. Tyler Mansfield, Inside Hilltopper Sports. That's the Western Kentucky side and the Rivals family of networks there. Mark, I don't know how to characterize that entirely. It seemed like he sort of alternated between happy to be there and almost like a little quiet confidence there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you go on the road, you beat an FIU team, after losing to Central Arkansas, and it was clear, you go watch the Central Arkansas, they had They had the Central Arkansas game. They had one plan, you know, go deep and see if you can catch them napping. And they did. You know, they were able to do that. And, you know, and sometimes that happens. You know, we go back to the Louisville FIU game back in, 2011? And they had a good wide receiver and T.Y. Hilton, and they just went deep a bunch. And, you know, Central Arkansas caught them napping for 404 yards passing. Obviously, U of L is not going to be a pass-heavy team, so maybe they don't have that to worry about. But it is a step up in competition, even if Louisville was 2-10 a year ago, from Central Arkansas and FIU. So I expect for Louisville to win this game. I feel good about even covering the 10. But I do think Western Kentucky's probably, you know, they're probably going to keep it close for a little bit longer than maybe we think.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it's not a whole lot. If tomorrow's game doesn't resemble the Eastern game, quite frankly, where there is some feeling like there was kind of some back and forth there, because honestly, one, that's how that game went. So if it were, you know, sure, this game were to take that shape again, but also if you historically, Satterfield's App State teams, like, it takes them a little while to sort of get the collective body blows on you,
right,
and then things begin to sort of snowball on you, and so you'll have, like, you go back and look at some even App State's blowout wins over the years. It'll be 7-3 after the first quarter,
right,
or 7-0, or 10-0, 4 minutes into the second quarter. And it'll feel like it's sort of been a little feeling out period in a game. And then all of a sudden, right before halftime and right coming out of the locker room, all of those punches have sort of started to sort of do their thing.
Right. And
then there's snowballs in the second half like it did against Eastern.
That's exactly where I am in this game. It's going to be like 14-10 at half, you know, 17-10 at halftime, something like that. Like, nobody's really putting it away. But then all of a sudden in the second half, I think Louisville's rushing attack will take a toll on that Western Kentucky defense. They haven't necessarily been tested like they're going to be tested with the size of that Louisville front. And that's been the one thing, in addition to the defense, but like offensively, that is really just remarkably better on this Louisville football team early on has been that offensive line. They've been really, really physical. And I think that in both games, the Notre Dame game too, that at the end, those guys were just done being blocked by Louisville's offensive line. And while the Notre Dame game didn't turn out the way we wanted it to, you could see that physicality take its toll by the end of both games.
Yeah, and I was, you know, equally, by the way, Mark, encouraged by how, on the one hand, Eastern did sort of seem to opt out of the rest of that game. I would agree with you.
Sure.
But on the other side, when Louisville's defense was on the field, I was very encouraged by the second, third, and even in some places fourth string defensive guys and how dialed in they were to maintaining that shutout and how dialed in, like, the starters and such were to the third and fourth guys holding on to the shutout.
Right.
Like, you know, Ramon Perrier is in playing nose tackle, and Gigi Robinson is, like, dialed into what's going out on the field.
Yeah.
You didn't have that a year ago.
No, you didn't. You didn't have guys that wanted to finish. And really, it's the willingness and almost desire for contact. I love watching early on how this team hits, how they play. I really, honestly, I love it. And while Louisville, you know, they didn't have the outcome we wanted to against Notre Dame, I enjoyed how they played. And they won some line of scrimmages. They liked hitting. They sacrificed their bodies. And that's football in its best form. When you see guys that will go and they'll try to hit somebody, they'll try to get low man wins, they'll try to get leverage, because football is really space and leverage, you know, and if you have the speed to make that matter. And so in Louisville's creating space with leverage, and I'm really enjoying it. So I'm fired up to watch this team play again tomorrow in Nashville. I hope people remember that this is an internet game, and they don't start searching for it around 4 o'clock Eastern tomorrow on their television, because they will not find it.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, Mark, about the hitting. And the first time I really had a sense that this team is in terms of just like temperament and demeanor is different, the play where Ian Book slowed up just a little bit before stepping out of bounds and got blasted and fumbled the ball back in bounds.
Oh, yeah. That was Kane pass,
even though Notre Dame recovered that, like, that was I think the hardest hit I'd seen in over a season.
Yeah.
And I don't remember them hitting anybody like that in the entirety of 2018. And that was sort of gave me some encouragement. Like, all right, these guys want to play differently. And they have. And they carried it over into week two.
They have. And, you know, last year I called them out for being the Roger Dorn of college football how many times? And, you know, Roger Dorn didn't want to do anything that was required to, you know, do the tough parts of baseball. He wanted to just do all the flashy things. And that was Louisville football last year. They didn't care what really the outcome was. They weren't ready to do the tough work that it takes to win. And what I see this year is a team that's willing to kind of go out there and fight for their brother, so to speak, and, you know, to really put their bodies on the line and to stay mentally dialed in. And I think it's a real testament. And we're only two games in here, but, like, I think just get that mentality turned around from one season to the next is fantastic. So I hope it carries on into November. And we're still singing the staff's praises when we get to the end of this season. But right now, I'm loving the early returns.
All right. Let's take a quick break here. Again, we're out here at the Ainsworth where the Card Nation fan party is tonight. So come by. There's no cover. They've got Tito's and Maker's Mark specials here. They've got food. There's a Topgolf simulator, long drive contest. You can win $200. Fans will be here really all night, well into tomorrow morning. I'll be here. Come by, say hello. Get yourself something to eat, something to drink here at the Ainsworth. It's fantastic. A great venue. Say hello to me and others. Joey Wagner, DJ K-Dog will be here. I mean, it'll be like you're at a home game. So stop by and say hello to us. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Patty Ice, you going to learn us a little something? How's that sound?
It's going to be a fun one. Got some interesting facts and some fun storylines. Got about four games for you we're going to preview on the other side of the break.
You're listening to The Drive, presented by The Fitness Market, right here on 93.9 The Ville. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Mark Blankenbaker.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis down here in Nashville. Mark Blankenbaker still at home in Louisville for now. He'll join me down here tomorrow for Louisville and Western Kentucky. Now it is time to check in with our very good friends with U of L Online Learning. Patty, hit it, buddy.
Let's take a look at the college football landscape, the ACC, and your Louisville Cardinals. It's time to go to school on 93.9 The Ville, presented by the University of Louisville Online Learning. Get the ball rolling on your career in sports management at louisville.edu/online. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Mark Blankenbaker.
Not Mark Ennis or Mark Blankenbaker. It's it's me, Pat Jaggers. But you guys like that, didn't you? But
yeah, you right. You do a mean intern Crean. Well done, buddy.
Or a mean James Strebel.
Ooh. Okay.
But all right, let's go to school here on 93.9 The Ville. This week we'll start off with some ACC football. Clemson, Syracuse, after a gutless performance last week against Maryland, Syracuse expects a sold-out capacity crowd of more than 49,000 fans that are going to be on hand at the sauna, excuse me, the Carrier Dome.
It is the sauna.
To watch the Orange and Tigers. It's the ninth football sellout in the sauna's history, excuse me, the Carrier Dome, and the first time since the 1998 season opener versus Tennessee. Also, the Orange are the last team to beat Clemson in the regular season, winning 27-24 at the sauna, excuse me, the Carrier Dome, on October 13, 2017. Since then, the Tigers have won 19 straight regular season games.
The best part about this is you saying, you know, the sauna, the Carrier Dome. Meanwhile, Syracuse is trying to convince everyone that everyone just calls it
The Dome.
They don't want you to call it the Carrier Dome because, as we talked about, I think about a month ago with Jeff Greer, the Carrier paid 10% of the cost to build the thing for naming rights in perpetuity, and Syracuse thinks they're getting ripped off, and so they're trying to call it the Carrier Dome as little as possible. I don't care what you call that building. Clemson's going to murder them in it.
It'll be curious to see what ESPN calls it. Do you think that they just call it the Dome, or do you think they'll put Carrier Dome up there? That'll be real curious to me.
If there's any place that your naming rights damn well better come through, it's on TV, right? Like, I can't imagine, because ESPN's going to be on the hook if they don't call it that. Like, I bet Carrier will have a fit if they don't.
Really?
Syracuse can do whatever they want. Like, that's what it's for. And so I would think there's no way that ESPN doesn't play along and call it the Carrier Dome. But again, we're missing we're burying the lead here. It doesn't matter what that building's called. It will be the place of death of Syracuse this weekend. I think that they are going to get annihilated. One, they're a little overrated. Two, Tommy DeVito's not nearly as good as Eric Dungy, which was shown, I think, over the weekend to be the case. And Clemson, there's absolutely no way that Clemson goes in there taking them nearly as lightly as they might have the last couple of years. I think they roll.
I do, too. I think Clemson's going to kill them. But Patty was talking about how it's the sauna. That is true, but the high temperature tomorrow in Syracuse is going to be 73 degrees. It shouldn't be that hot, but if it is totally full, that it'll be pretty uncomfortable. That is a stagnant air place. It is probably one of the most miserable places to be if it's 80, 84 to 85 degrees that day, because inside it's just like being in a hot airplane where you can't go anywhere and the air's not moving. It's actually miserable. We'll see how it goes tomorrow.
All I think about with that game is how Maryland looked 15 times faster than Syracuse did at every step, and that Clemson has got four or five guys that are as fast and as dangerous and as shifty as Maryland did at running back. I don't know what they're going to do.
Do you think Maryland's for real?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I think
I do too.
I think Loxley is just has a very good chance of turning out to be one of those rare guys that kind of blows his first chance as a head coach. Belichick like this.
Well, it's Mexico State, right? Or New Mexico, one of the two.
New Mexico, yeah. Blows it and learns from it. We talk about players improving all the time. You know, coaches improve too.
Sure.
They do. Some do. Some don't. Some do. And I think Loxley might very well prove to be one of those guys. It was very funny, again, last week in the offseason, you had him and Gaddis, who were both on the Alabama staff, having this kind of offseason sparring back and forth about who was really the offensive guy last year at Alabama, while Michigan couldn't do jack against Army. Maryland was out there scoring 750 points against Syracuse over the weekend. I think we kind of know who's calling the plays now.
I think we do.
All right. Up next here on U of L's Learning Go to School segment here on 93.9 The Ville. All right, an interesting matchup tonight, a Friday night matchup. UNC at Wake Forest. Wake Forest's oldest rival in North Carolina, as the two teams played the very first college football game in the state in 1888, with the Deacons winning with a whopping 6-4. How about that, fellas? But this is a
6-4.
Yes,
wow.
6-4. This
Thriller.
Matchup tonight is a non-conference game, only such game nationally between the two conference opponents in 2019. This marks the first time these two teams have met with undefeated records and two or more victories in the entire 131-year history of this rivalry.
What do you think about this being a non-conference game, Mark? Because I think about it from a network perspective. It takes away inventory that you could have in the ACC if conference teams are just going to play conference teams as non-conference games, right?
Yeah, but I think if you think about these two teams, one, North Carolina played South Carolina in the non-conference. I would rather have them play Wake in the non-conference than have them play James Madison and put that on the network and no one's going to watch it.
That's true.
But to me, this is a confession by both sides that the divisions blow. Because they don't get to play each other nearly enough. They are in-state rivals that hate each other, that are used to playing each other on a regular basis, and the divisions ruin that. It's no different than Louisville's going to be in the league for 15-ish years and play Virginia Tech once. You are not conference mates. You are roommates at best if you play each other once every 15 years. In fact, I think if you can go anyone's full 5 years on campus as an athlete and not play somebody in conference, you're not in the same conference.
Yeah, no, and that's the way Louisville will how it will be with Virginia Tech. As you mentioned, they will play them next year for the first time being in the league, and I think there's some frustration between Wake and North Carolina why they can't square off every single year, and I don't know if the conference will adjust it without going to another game on the schedule. You know, that's probably the only way they could probably address this and do what we're talking about, being able to play everybody in the other division every fifth year. That's probably the only way to really accomplish that.
Well, I think the only way to do it is to get rid of the divisions and give everyone like three permanent opponents. Mm. And then everyone else just rotates, and I think you've got it covered. And it's, by the way, it's not just the Carolina schools. Boston College, Pittsburgh, Syracuse all routinely complain that they don't get to play Florida State or Georgia Tech enough. Because those are the southernmost teams. Like, they don't get to play them nearly enough and get the exposure in the two sort of talent-rich areas mm-hmm. on a regular basis. So there are lots of people sort of motivated to do this thing a little bit differently. Also of note, Mark, I know this is a favorite subject of yours. We mentioned this before, earlier this week. The only two coaches suspended in WikiLeaks, Jay Bateman, Lonnie Galloway, both on the staff for North Carolina tonight against Wake Forest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all in on North Carolina tonight.
Me too.
And you know how I don't like Wake Forest. I don't really respect the program, and I don't respect how they handled the WikiLeaks situation that happened with Louisville back in 2016. The story is, the way it was told is incorrect. What actually happened is that they found a Louisville playbook, Louisville game plan on the sideline, and they used it, and they discovered that there were a few plays that Louisville had that they hadn't run and shouldn't have had, and that's how they discovered it, and they didn't say anything until after the game. So that whole thing was really disingenuous, and Wake Forest can play the holier-than-thou card as much as they want to, but I know what they really are, and you should too.
All righty, let's go back to school here for our third game during this segment. This next game is Florida State at Virginia. Going to be a pretty tough matchup for the Seminoles. They've had an up-and-down start to their season. A win for Virginia on Saturday night against Florida State would mark the first 3-0 start to a season by the Cavaliers since 2005. Also, FSU has some work to do, boys. This defense has not been good. On the defensive side of the ball, they face a tough task in dual-threat QB Bryce Perkins. Florida State is currently 108th in the country in rush defense, giving up 196 yards a game. Yikes. They're also struggling in pass defense as well, giving up 324 yards a game in their first two matchups, and that is the 118th worst in the country. Florida State is 7.5-point dogs in this one, fellas. What do you think?
You know, for me, Mark, I'll tell you, I think Virginia's gonna roll. I think I like Bryce Perkins a lot. He jumped over two Louisville safeties last year en route to that win, and I think they're a lot better than they were a year ago. And I think Florida State is on the edge. And if they take a beating in this game, then I expect that Louisville goes down to Tallahassee next week and finds itself a very vulnerable Seminole squad.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's a bad sign coming into a season is after week one, the opponent runs 106 plays against you and you lose. And then you have, after week one, you have the defensive coordinator come out and say that they are going to simplify things after week one, only to escape in overtime against Louisiana Monroe because they missed an extra point and scored 44 points. And then after week two, in which you simplified things after the way things went in week one, your coach goes out and hires Jim Levitt to be an off-the-field analyst and says to the local media that he will help the current defensive coordinator simplify things in week three. Things are not going well for Willie Taggart at Florida State, and they are playing a Virginia team that, again, I think is what Satterfield sort of looks like for a team to be. They're very physical. They got better on defense first. They finally found a quarterback. They're very disciplined. They wear teams out at the body blows, and it's funny the way Virginia has been like a bellwether for Florida State at different times in the ACC. They handed them their first ever loss in the league in 95. They were the last loss that really plagued Jimbo Fisher before that team sort of rocketed into becoming kind of a national championship contender. They lost at home to Virginia that year. And then the next year and beginning there forward up until his last year, they were very, very, very good. They've always been kind of a bellwether for Florida State, and I think they're going to stick it to Florida State this weekend. I wouldn't be shocked if they came close to shutting Florida State out. I wouldn't want to be James Blackman this weekend.
No, I wouldn't either. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, their defense is bad. It's just kind of like the Florida State defense is just not up to what we're used to out of Tallahassee, ranked 124th in the country. They have played Boise and Louisiana Monroe, but neither one of those offenses really stick out to you. And so the fact that they have given up over 1,000 yards in two games against those two particular offenses is alarming. And when you're going to play a a quarterback like Bryce Perkins, I think they're in major, major trouble.
And look, if they lose this weekend and are sitting at 1-2, and they still have to play Louisville, NC State, Miami, Florida, Clemson, like that is an unbelievable. Like they're not going to make a bowl game at 1-2. Like if they lose this weekend and are 1-2, and are really are lucky to be 1-2. Like, they're not going to make a bowl game. Willie Taggart's going to be in big-time trouble, and I agree with what you said at the very beginning, Mark. Florida State, they lose this weekend. Louisville goes down there. They are going to be on the brink. They're going to be where Louisville was after Florida State a year ago if they get handled this weekend. They're going to be a very, 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 very shaky sort of eggshell thin team, if you ask me.
Exactly right, man. And I'm hoping for that because I think Louisville is going to need every single advantage they can possibly find this season, even though – because you know, if they beat Virginia, they should have some confidence coming out of that. I want to find a vulnerable team down there in Tallahassee going down and not going up, and I think we will. I think we're gonna see a really Tallahassee that's in a lot of upheaval by the time we get down there.
One more, Patty Ice.
Yes, this is our last game here as we go to school on 93.9 Neville. This is not an ACC opponent. This is a in-state. Kent State travels to number 8 Auburn, and Kent is 36-point dogs. But in case you guys missed it last week, Kent State hosted a field hockey classic next to their stadium, okay? The university forced Temple and Maine to end their game early while this classic was going on due to the football team needing the field to do their pregame fireworks. Now, a source on the ground has told me in Alabama that Auburn does not plan to shut down any field hockey games, so they'll be able to do the fireworks, there won't be an issue, and nobody will be pissed off about field hockey. Now, I'll tell you what, I think Mark Blakenbaker Sr. would definitely have something to say about this, huh, Mark?
Oh, he definitely did. If people don't know, my dad coached women's field hockey for 16 years over at Bellarmine. He's pretty hot about this, frankly, because you didn't move the teams off for a football game. You moved them off for a fireworks display, and I think Auburn's going to have a lot of fireworks for Kent State in this game. The War Eagles celebration will have pregame. That'll be enough fireworks for Kent State, and I expect Auburn to roll this one. And Kent State, you know, it's hot. You know, the temperature has gone up on that administration, and it might even go up even more after Auburn routs this team.
By the way, that wasn't even one of the funnier things that happened in the MAC last weekend, although that is bizarre. I don't know if either of you happened to catch this, but, you know, Jim McElwain, you and I, Mark, have had so much fun at his expense for just being such a humorless pud over the shark picture.
Yep.
And people joking that was him. And even Kyle Tucker at SEC Media Days 3 years ago gave him a chance to kind of laugh at it, and he refused.
Wouldn't do it.
Instead, acted like he was being attacked and his family was being attacked. And, like, you humorless jerk, stop it.
It cost him his job.
Of course, yeah, he ended up lying about it. That's exactly right. And being bullied or being threatened by people as they were losing. But over last week, they played Wisconsin. Central Michigan did. And in game week, he was asked about playing Wisconsin, and Wisconsin looked good in week 1 because they blew out Charlie Strong, and they're in big trouble there in South Florida. And he said, look, about Wisconsin. Look. It's always good when somebody starts with look. Look. They have no idea what's about to come. I feel really good about these guys and the preparation, talking about his Central Michigan boys. Would either of you like to guess what the final score of the game that Jim McElwain described as, look, they have no idea what's about to come. I feel really good about these guys and their preparation. What was the final score of Wisconsin-Central Michigan over the weekend?
Did they score? I think I remember seeing 49-0, or is that the week 1 score?
That was week 1 against South Florida.
Okay. Well, did they score at all in week 2?
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't know.
Wisconsin has 2 games. They've given up no points.
Okay. I thought that. But what did Wisconsin put up on them, though?
Patty Ice, you got to guess.
I'm going to say 63.
I'll go 42.
61 to nothing.
61. There you go.
61 to nothing. So Jim McElwain, humorless, humor-free, no personality, pud. Jim McElwain says these guys have no idea what they're in for. I like our guys in their preparation, and goes out and loses 61-0. Why a MAC team would ever want to try to fire somebody up at all, much less in like a bye game against Wisconsin, who plays like that man ball, murder ball style anyway, makes no sense to me, but you deserve that.
Absolutely. And they are the number two rushing defense in the country behind Michigan State, who gives up negative 3 yards per game. Michigan State at negative three. You didn't know that? Michigan State has given up negative 3 yards per game this year. The negative 6 yards total on 52 rushing attempts this year.
That's amazing. So somebody with no rushing yards has more rushing yards against Michigan State than anyone who has played Michigan State.
Right. Exactly. It's
That's
funny.
That's better than any of the stats so far.
Yeah, no, Michigan State, and it was in week one. They actually, I don't know if you saw this, Mark, but in week one, Tulsa had negative 73 yards in their first game, and then Western Michigan was able to muster up 67 yards total. But they're still Michigan State's still at negative 6 yards given allowed in rushing this season.
What has happened to the MAC?
Don't
you remember hashtag MACtion, right? Where the MAC was full of guys and innovative offenses, clever offenses, and it was fun. And when conference play came, they took over weeknights and scored like crazy. And you know, Brian Kelly was there. And you had all of these really interesting guys. Dave Doran was at Northern Michigan, or Northern Illinois, excuse me.
Yeah, it was a bunch of coaches. Yeah,
yeah, you had a bunch of really interesting coaches all over the place, Central Michigan, in Toledo, and like these different offenses that were fun. And it was like you couldn't wait till late in the year when you were going to get like some games that were going to be in the high 40s. These guys just went back and forth. Urban Meyer was in the MAC at Bowling Green.
That's right.
We are nowhere even close to that anymore.
No, I mean, and you went back to Urban Meyer. Nick Saban was at Toledo. I mean, you know, like if you want to, like the MAC has a rich history of developing high level head coaches, so you can see really good football there a lot. And there's just the talent gap, but I don't think that's the case right now. I think that the great coaches that we're really waiting on, I think we may have found one ourselves in Scott Satterfield, and we might have some out there. Out west and the Mountain West, and then in the American Athletic Conference, I think that's where the shift has happened. But
I disagree. I think that the cradle of coaches now, the incubator of coaches now, it's the American.
Well, yeah, like, the American makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, but because that's the next step. But you know, it's I don't know. The MAC had it there for a while, and they don't have it at the moment.
It's a shame. I miss that. I miss MACtion, hashtag MACtion. I miss, you know, innovative offenses and sort of being clever and just, I don't know, sort of the throwback to that being the cradle of coaches when they were the ones that fed the Big Ten for so long.
Yeah.
As well. You know, and that's college football. All right. Good job, Patty Eyes. That was your U of L online learning segment there. A lot to learn there. And I am looking forward to North Carolina Wake Forest. If North Carolina wins that one, Mark, I'm kind of curious what you think about this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you think that – does that make you feel any differently about Wake Forest and the winability of that game?
I already expect to beat Wake Forest for Louisville.
Okay.
I've been kind of there all year. I don't like Wake Forest defense at all.
They have not been able to stop anybody.
And I think that the way Louisville runs the ball – even before I even saw this team, I felt like we had a shot. Now, North Carolina's a different deal. Like, I didn't expect them to be anywhere even close. And, you know, they opened up the season, beat South Carolina, come back next week, beat Miami. Like, I think whatever has gone on there, Mac Brown has tapped into it. He's done the right thing with his assistant coaches. And I don't know how long he'll last there at Carolina given his age, but – and for right now, there's some excitement there in Chapel Hill they haven't had in a while.
No, I'm fully prepared to be most wrong about a player and a coach this year so far, 2 weeks in. I'm fully prepared to be the most wrong about Mac Brown, the coach, and Jalen Hurts, the player.
Yep.
Through 2 weeks, I look as dumb as could be about those two in particular. Through 2 weeks. We'll see if it lasts. Again, my prediction before the year was that Jalen Hurts wouldn't even finish as the starter, and he might win the freaking Heisman.
Right, and you sent me this earlier in the week. Jalen Hurts goes to the Rose Bowl this week to play UCLA, and UCLA is giving its alumni and fans free tickets to this game because of
how bad
it's been. I can't believe that. This is a big-time night game. It's going to be on Fox. and UCLA's giving away tickets with Chip Kelly as its head coach.
Well, going 2-10, coming off a 2-10 season, opening with Notre Dame, like they sold tickets for $85, and they all but sold out. They came very close to selling the game out. And UCLA is going to host Oklahoma, and they can't even sell them at all. They are giving them away. It's amazing what has become of Chip Kelly and what really has become of Pac-12 football entirely, because there was a time, you know, they were as good as anybody else as well. And I think there was a time people thought they were going to be the counterbalance to the SEC, and that sure as hell ain't happening either. All right, 2 hours here in the books. Real quick, want to tell you about our friends at Shady Rays. Check them out at ShadyRays.com. Look, these are the best sunglasses I've ever owned. I've got them sitting here on the table here as the sun starts to set through these windows here the restaurant here as we get ready for the Card Nation fan party here tonight at the Ainsworth. Look, these are quality polarized shades. You won't own a better a pair of sunglasses than these. Every time you buy one, they donate 10 meals to Feeding America. It's a local Louisville company. Like we talk about this with Fitness Market and other places. You want to support local people who do business and live where you live and their kids go to school, where your kids go to school. That's Shady Rays. And they have a lifetime guarantee on lost and broken sunglasses. So you lose a pair, you break them. You buy a pair, you've got them for life. Use promo code ESPN on ShadyRays.com right now. You'll get a buy one, get one free deal on any pair of sunglasses on the site. Take advantage of it. Shady Rays. ShadyRays.com. It's a fantastic pair of sunglasses. Check them out there. Great partners of the show as well. That's 2 hours in the books here from Nashville on the drive on 93 in the Ville. When we come back, we'll make our picks for this week. We got 10 games. 10 games, no games between ranked teams this weekend, but we got 10 games nonetheless. We'll pick those. Patty Ice will step in and be the picker for Brian for the rest of the season. Here on the drive on 93 in the Ville. Be right back.